The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Wadim Lesimcha, Anthony, how are you?
Chagim uzmanim lesason.
Oh, very nice.
Boker tov, yes, pretty good, thank you. Still lovely, lovely weather to be out in the sukkah. No sign of rain, which is, I know, very unusual for most parts of the world. As soon as we hear the word Sukkot, the rain starts to come down. Not in Israel this year. I have to say that usually now, I mean, we're already halfway through October, and by now, well, not quite halfway through, but we're certainly heading into October, and by now we would already have experienced the first rains of the winter, the so-called yoreh. I think Hebrew is the only language that actually has a word for the first rain of the winter season, which is called the yoreh. We haven't had that yet. The weather is wonderful, really, you know, warm days, a little cooler at night, and it's really lovely to be out. Unfortunately, of course, we are limited as to how far out we can go, and that's obviously annoying a lot of people, because we're all kind of stuck at home when we'd really like to be out and about enjoying some of the wonderful nature and scenery that Israel has to offer.
Interesting. Anthony, the story that I wanted to discuss with you, I'm finding very confusing, because we were reporting, and all reports were that the Israeli government was going to meet on Thursday to decide what to do further in the lockdown. Last night, the Knesset meets, and they've decided to extend the restrictions on protests for another week against the backdrop of more protest action and clashes with police. So what's the difference here? Is this specific to protest?
It wasn't the Knesset that met yesterday. It was, in fact, the cabinet. So we have the government, we have the cabinet, and we have a corona cabinet, and we have the Knesset, and we have the coronavirus commissioner. We have so many different organizations, bodies, people involved in the decision making that I don't blame you for being confused as to really who has the final say.
Right.
We all feel a little confused. But we have a particular situation where there is there has been a decision to restrict protests. The decision to restrict protests is not taken very lightly at all. It's considered to be an assault on democracy, that even when we are obliged to keep social distance and we're obliged to stay away from other people, the right to protest seems to be almost something that's entrenched in basic democracy and that can't be touched at all. Even though we don't have a constitution, we have this thing called a basic law, but the right to protest is considered to be the foundation stone of our democracy and our democratic rights. And the moment the government decided that they were going to restrict the rights to protest, there was, first of all, an uproar in general, but second of all, an understanding and expectation that such a restriction had to be done on a very, very short-term basis and under very, very stringent conditions. And at the moment, the way that it works is that the restrictions are for only 1 week at a time, and that the cabinet is required to renew them in the event that they're going to be extended for a further period of a week, which is exactly what happened yesterday, last night. Apparently, the cabinet consulted by phone call rather than meeting in person, and it was decided to extend the restrictions on protests for another week. Many members of the cabinet were not sure that even this extension is required, but it was agreed nonetheless, and every week there is going to be further pressure to not renew this restriction on protest, because, as I've said before, it's considered to be something which is really fundamental to Israel's democracy. So the protests in the meantime have been extended, which means the restrictions on protest have been extended, which means not that there can be no protests, but that you are obliged, forced to protest only within 1 kilometer of the area that you live, and that, of course, social distancing needs to be maintained at all protests. At last night, again, there were massive protests in all parts of Israel, everybody sticking within that 1 kilometer restriction, trying to maintain social distancing. And there have been standoffs with the police. There's been a lot of cynicism about this restriction on protests, because some people have accused Prime Minister Netanyahu of restricting protests against the backdrop of corona, simply in order to serve his own leadership and in order to preserve his own self-esteem as Prime Minister, to try to avoid people gathering outside his house in their thousands, as they have been doing week after week after week for the last few months. So people are just saying that this is just a cynical plot to prevent people from protesting against him. We'll take our counsel on that. I'm not sure what is right. I have no doubt that the Prime Minister is relieved that the protests outside Balfour Street residence in Jerusalem have been reduced. I have no doubt that he's relieved about that. But of course, the coronavirus issue is not insubstantial, and one cannot underestimate the effects that such gatherings of so many people at protests might have on spreading the virus. There has been, by the way, no official scientific evidence that gathering at protests outdoors has spread the virus in any way. Unfortunately, however, there is clear evidence that it does injure people. There have been clashes with police yesterday. Four policemen were injured again in clashes with protesters. It's still not clear whether the initial spark to violence is initiated by the police side or by the protesters side. Everybody is accusing the other side of being responsible. But at the moment, we're having a very unfortunate situation where we've got violent clashes on the streets between protesters, anti-government protesters, and between our police. And also, on a completely different note, violent protests, violent clashes between police and the Haredi community, who the police are trying to enforce, where the police are trying to enforce social distancing rules, because the instance of coronavirus outbreak within the Haredi community is really extreme, way higher than any other community, probably the highest in the world if you look at that community in isolation. And yet the gatherings and the disregard for social distancing simply continue unabated. Astonishing.
Unbelievable. I was actually saying earlier that the world, we will never get rid of coronavirus unless we stay in our homes and adhere to all of these things. As tiring as it is, we have to wear masks, and protesting about it is not going to send the virus away. And it's not business as usual. It will never be business as usual again.
That's true. I think the whole protest movement, however, is not so much about the coronavirus restrictions, but of course it emanates from these accusations that are being leveled against the Prime Minister of misconduct and mismanagement in his position. It's very, very much political. Yeah. And also, the protest is against the Prime Minister because there is a view that he is using the coronavirus situation to his own ends. And that is really what the crux of the protest is about, not about the restrictions for corona per se, but implementing restrictions supposedly designed to combating the corona issue, simply in order to serve the Prime Minister's purpose, which a lot of people feel is, for example, what the protest restrictions have been all about. And of course, the other issue is that we still have constant examples of people in leadership positions behaving badly. Yeah. Now it's the Prime Minister's wife who decided that she needed to go to her hairdresser in spite of the lockdown and in spite of the fact that she's clearly not allowed to do that under the current restrictions. But of course, she had to go to the hairdresser to have her hair done. Why was that? Because she was going to appear in a video in order to implore people to adhere to coronavirus restrictions.
What an irony.
Then we have the head of the Shabbat, the head of the Shin Bet, who apparently hosted members of his family at his sukkah, clearly against the restrictions that have been laid down. Why is it that people in leadership positions feel that they are about the law and that they're not obliged to be good personal examples in order to get people to follow suit? I don't understand that all the time that our leaders are disregarding the rules that they set down for other people, they cannot expect the general population to follow those rules. I don't understand why people are just flouting the rules like they are.
You know what? Because we don't have examples. This isn't news to us. You know, when last did we look at any leadership on a global scale, or, you know, on an Israeli scale, even in South Africa, and say, you know what, that person is an example and leads by example? It's do what I say, not what I do.
Yeah, I think there are some exceptions to that, but what you're saying as a general rule is unfortunately correct.
Yeah. Let's talk about happier things. An yes. Israeli supermarket owner is bidding for ownership of an airline. Tell us more.
Would you fly on an airline that has a supermarket brand on it, owned by a supermarket? I don't know. I'd be worried it was the checkout counter staff that are checking you in at there. I don't know. I'm being cynical, of course.
So would you have to weigh your food before they delivered it to you?
Possibly so.
You know?
It's a sign of our times. Because once upon a time we thought that airlines were these huge companies and supermarkets were kind of big companies, but not quite like airlines. And now supermarkets are apparently all the rage. They are the business. And airlines, not so much. And of course there are a lot of issues about financial well-being of airlines, particularly Israeli airlines. El Al hasn't been flying already for some time, is grounded again as a result of the current restrictions. Israel Air is the company that we're talking about now that is apparently up for sale, and the person or one of the people involved in the consortium bidding for Israel Air is a man called Rami Levy, who has a supermarket chain in Israel named after him that he, of course, owns and runs. The Rami Levy supermarket chain, it is also a listed company. It's done very, very well indeed. It has a certain kind of reputation about it, a little chaotic. It's not one of these very, very clean, prim and proper walk-in kind of clinical type of supermarkets. It's the opposite. Get your knuckle dusters out, get your knee pads on, get your trolley, and head into the supermarket for whatever comes next. That's the reputation that Rami Levy has, and of course he's done very well out of it. He's now part of the consortium that's bidding for Israel. It's astonishing that they have bid just 70 million shekels, 20 million US dollars, to buy the airline. It's not clear whether their bid will be accepted or not. He's part of a consortium. But I think it's just an ironic sign of where we are at the moment in our times that it is a supermarket owner who thinks that he can now buy an airline. Really strange.
Listen, I think it's interesting. It's the same business principles apply, whatever business field you're in. Anthony, how big is their fleet? Do you know? Does Israel only fly domestically within Israel, or do they do international?
They do international as well. They're more sort of a charter style airline. I mean, obviously, El Al is the flagship carrier, is the national carrier. Israel originally, along with Arkia, was doing mostly domestic stuff backwards and forwards to Eilat and some domestic, closer by things. But in recent times, they've taken to flying abroad a lot more. They have a number of different routes that they have traditionally been flying more on a charter basis. Currently, I'm told they only have 7 planes, so it's a relatively small company. But they do these flights to Greece and to Bulgaria, and to places like that. Okay. They also have flown across the Atlantic, but I think that their main focus is really not domestic so much as kind of just in the local area more.
Yesterday we had some suggestions of countries that will be next to follow on to make peace with Israel. I mean, did you ever think that there would be such thing as peace in the Middle East?
Well, certainly not with some of these countries. I mean, you know, we've always talked about peace and peace breaking out and the possibility of coming to peace. But I think that we always envisaged that the peace would be really with our immediate neighbors. I think that, you know, because we are a nation that's fought so many wars and we've got so many war stories, unfortunately, to tell, so many of our family members and so many of our close people being killed in wars over the years. Every family in Israel pretty much is affected by some event that's happened, either an act of terror or an event in the war. That, you know, we've spoken about peace, so many wonderful songs written about the possibility of peace, but most of those I think have been focused on, as I say, countries around the borders of Israel, the Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, immediate countries rather than the countries further afield, because obviously the war that we conduct with those countries, or that we have conducted with those countries, is slightly more remote, slightly different. And here we have now a whole list of countries who are not so much on our borders, but who potentially break the blanket Arab view, because at one point, certainly in the early years of the state, there was this talk about the Arab-Israeli conflict, where the Arab world was considered to be united in its opposition to Israel. And as we, as Egypt entered into a peace agreement, and so Jordan as well, now countries from the Gulf area, we see that the Arab world is really not united and is breaking up, and potentially could then result in peace coming closer to our borders, and particularly, of course, with the Palestinians, because they seem to be now isolated as a result of all of these countries establishing closer links with Israel.
Okay, so purely for speculation, yesterday we had a suggestion of Kuwait being one of the countries that might follow suit to make peace with
Kuwait's
Israel.
Kuwait's definitely on the list, and particularly now with the new emir, there have been reports that he's come under significant U.S. pressure following the death of the emir of Kuwait and the succession by his half-brother, that he, the new emir, has come under a lot of U.S. pressure to somehow find a way to enter into a peace agreement with Israel. Certainly Kuwait is one of those countries on the list for sure.
Okay, then I think we spoke about Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia has had a lot of discussion, and certainly is one of those countries on the list, and we've seen some positive action from Saudi Arabia, particularly giving Israeli airlines now overfly rights, something that never happened before. This is just really, really new, and some really interesting comments being made by Saudi Arabian officials, including a former intelligence official, head of intelligence in Saudi Arabia, very, very critical of the Palestinians and of the fact that they seem somehow to be putting their foot in the way, trying to prevent other Arab countries from signing agreements, peace agreements with Israel. So Saudi Arabia is a huge fish, and that would be a very, very big achievement indeed, but definitely one of those countries on the list.
What about Qatar?
Qatar's also there. I mean, Qatar's become much more involved, mediating with the Palestinians, particularly with Hamas in Gaza, trying to provide money to the man in the street in Gaza rather than to the regime in Gaza. And as such, has been cooperating with the Israeli government in order to make that happen. The Israeli government has been very supportive of this. So there's already been some cooperation between Qatar and Israel. Qatar is definitely there.
All right. So that's where my suggestions end.
Okay.
Other countries
that are there include Oman. Yeah. We do know, for example, that Israeli senior officials, including the Prime Minister, I believe, have visited Oman. So Oman, I think, while being less influential, is certainly a country that that we could look to. Morocco is an interesting inclusion on the list. Of course, we have a lot of links with Morocco through a very, very big Moroccan Jewish community, people who've emigrated from Morocco to come and live in Israel. And they still hold some quite close links with their former country of origin, with their country of origin. So Morocco has a lot of complications. There are a lot of complications around a potential peace agreement with Morocco, but it's definitely on the list, as is Sudan. And other African countries are Tunisia, that I've seen mentioned, Algeria, and Libya as well. I've also seen mentioned as a potential candidate. The ones that have really been surprising for me that I've seen mentioned in some lists include Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria. Now, I don't know how realistic those last few are.
I think Syria might be more realistic than you realize. The way that Israel was helping Syrian civilians during the war, I think maybe things have changed a bit.
Things have changed a lot. And I think that Israel is trying to engage with civilians, individuals, residents of the country, rather than with the regime. But at some point that will have an impact on the government. So I don't know. Syria seems to me to be a little bit further away because it's so much under influence from Iran. But it's certainly not beyond the realms of possibility. And if we count up the countries that I've just mentioned, I think that brings us to more than even 10 countries. I know some lists have said 5 or 6 are coming up soon. Other lists have said 8 or 9. I think realistically that we've got 2 or 3 that could be done relatively soon, that another 2 or 3, a little bit more in the medium term. And who knows, maybe all of these countries might might come to sign peace agreements with Israel in the not too distant future. I think a lot of it is about economic pressure, particularly coming from the US and potentially from the European Union as well. But if enough pressure is put on some of these countries, because of course they have economic reliance on the United States, who knows, it might happen.
All right, Anthony, thank you so much. And that's where we leave it today. Just very quickly, Brian Sarking wanting to know, he says, please ask Anthony to talk about the survey that came out yesterday showing how Israel would vote if elections were held now. So maybe we can follow that up tomorrow.
Let's talk about that tomorrow. It is a fascinating story, and there is a lot to talk about. So I will definitely discuss that tomorrow. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you so much.